Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women.
We focus on the Latinx presence in the comic industry, with a special focus on strong female characters and creators.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode number 35, girls. We're here and we're queer. Get used to it.
It's funny that you said that because I was about to say the same thing.
I know that definitely applies to me.
No, it just, it was a chant I heard in some show or something. Yeah, and I was like, we're here. And I was like, oh, there's a space to say something cool.
Yeah, it's like, we're here, we're queer, and nobody can do anything about it.
So we are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Welcome back, girls. We are just back from San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes, I am still getting over it. It's like, I need a vacation from my vacation. Mm-hmm. And San Diego Comic-Con is a lot of work. Even when you don't have a booth or you're not, I mean, just traversing down the aisles is work. Yes.
We talked to a lot of people too. It felt like I was at work.
Yeah.
Right? So like, dang.
Yeah. It was I feel that it was really productive and there was a lot of things we did. A lot of people I actually talked to and met, so that was really awesome. And I did got an obscene amount of walking. I feel like I walked what I haven't walked all year.
Yes, I agree. And it was so hot. Even inside the convention center, I'm like, what is going on inside? Like, preview night, I could understand. I'm like, oh, maybe they were like, oh, we're going to cut down on the bill on preview night because there's not going to be as many people here.
Lies.
But all the rest of the days was exactly the same. And it was just that in and of itself took a lot out of me just because being hot and sweaty and humid and sticky, it just, it sapped all my energy.
It's not the biz.
Well, plus, I mean, Kristen, her foot kept swelling up on her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she had trouble walking around. There's stairs. There's an even, you know, even when we, what was it? When we scan our badges, there's a little kind of a hump that you have to get over.
Yeah.
And if you are not used to it, your foot gets caught.
Yeah, actually, my foot was getting caught all over the place over the weekend. And everyone's like, what is it with you and conventions?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yep.
And for me, I was... I'm very grateful to be on the, to have been on the panel because we were able to get, what was it, 5-day passes?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Fanbase Press for inviting us to the con, or else I would have never ever gone to San Diego Comic Con because this was the first year that I went.
Yes.
And it was a lot of fun, but it was also very, very, very exhausting.
Yeah.
So much money. So much money.
Oh, I know.
And this is not that I didn't even pay for my pass. I got the free. But 5 days is definitely...
You have to train for that. Like, mentally and physically.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I have to mentally prepare for going to San Diego Comic-Con the same way I mentally prepare for going to the mall during Christmas.
Oh, my God. I feel like that speaks a lot.
I was unprepared, so we actually ended up driving back and forth from LA to San Diego.
I don't know how you guys did that.
Yeah.
Man, that was really, really difficult. Fortunately, my brother got passes as well, so he was able to go in a lottery to reserve parking in the Hilton.
Oh. And
so he was able to actually get parking.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. So, he won the raffle, so he was able to purchase two parking passes for Thursday and Friday.
So the raffle is to buy
how much
parking?
I think it was either $25 or $35.
Oh, well, that's actually not bad.
That's not bad.
I mean, it's $35 for parking if that's what it was, but I mean, still, for being so close.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that we end up packing, like, you know, we to make sandwiches and stuff. so that we don't have to waste time trying to find a place to eat.
Yeah.
And or the money.
The lines are so crazy. Mm. Even if you... Okay, so con food is con food. Like,
oh, my God, yes.
You have a choice between prepackaged salads, prepackaged gross cold sandwiches, yummy Annie's... Annie's pretzels. Those are so good. Mm-hmm. But it's not does a meal make, that's for sure.
Exactly.
But, yeah. And, oh, yeah, and pizza, I think, this one. Okay. I was not about to lose my Latina card paying $12 for fish tacos.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly. If $12 for fish tacos. And you know, the worst thing is like you're standing
around. Well, I don't buy fish tacos at all in general.
And they were stinky.
Ew.
Oh. Whenever they were in the sales pavilion, and every time I stepped into the sales pavilion, I could smell it. And I'm like, is it like fish when it's fresh? Isn't it not supposed to smell?
It's supposed to smell.
Yeah.
I only buy fish tacos in Ensenada. That's it. I don't buy them anywhere around here.
I think those definitely are fresh.
Yeah, so, if you decide to go to a restaurant to go eat, you have to go and walk across the trolley tracks, and through traffic and through people in cosplay and in the sun, and, you know, they're ushering you like cattle, like, you know, and then you finally get to the gas lamp area, and then you have to look for a place to eat, or you could actually sit down, which will probably be an hour wait.
Yeah.
So best case scenario is to pack your lunch.
That's what we did, actually.
Yeah, that's what we did.
We were able to, Jen and I stayed at a apartment in the Hillcrest area of San Diego, which is basically the West Hollywood area, beautifully adorned with rainbow flags everywhere. And so we went to Ralph's and the first day and bought sandwich stuff and breakfast stuff even. So we had breakfast at the apartment before we left every day to to cut down on cost.
I would get up. We got up at like 4:30 and I got dressed, took showers, and then packed up the stuff, and I would make breakfast sandwiches for us to eat on the way over. Because you want to avoid the traffic, so you gotta go early. Exactly. So that turned out well, because we would go to the car, and my, you know, it's so crazy. Like, my brother, his girlfriend, and my nephew all took naps in the car, and I'm like, it's Comic-Con, we can't take naps. Like, I'll see you guys inside.
Oh, so they left, they went to the car and napped?
Well, so we went to the car to eat, and then after we ate, they just took a nap.
Yeah. I'm not judging them. Do you know how many times I would just wanted to lie down on the exhibit floor and take a fucking nap?
I know, there were multiple times where I was like, if we just weren't staying so far, I would have gone back and just, like,
napped,
sat and enjoyed the air conditioning, or like, just put my feet up or something.
Me and my little brother brought her PS4.
Yes, they did.
Oh, so did my brother. I think you get what are the passports, or when you talk to other people from your... Okay, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know anything about video games, but they all brought their little thing, DS.
Oh,
Nintendo DS.
Yes. Yeah, and then I guess they connect with other people at the con who brought their DS as well.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah. You get points, you get skins and stuff like that.
Yeah.
My little brother hasn't used his DS in forever, but no, the PS4, like... A PS4, like a console, like the big thing.
Oh shit, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, to put in the Airbnb.
Yes.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah, so we were playing video games.
That's cool.
Over there. Our ping was awful, but we managed.
I don't know what that means.
It means we lagged a lot.
Oh, I see.
Because the internet wasn't fast enough.
Aww.
But it was still fun. It's interesting playing video games with a lot of lag. Because
you don't know what's happening.
Because you don't know what's happening. You don't know where you're going. The enemy doesn't know where you're going. Yeah. Are you shooting at a wall, or are you shooting at an enemy? Guess we'll find out in Who's Dead Next.
That's awesome. Now, we have a new segment called Saludos, but I feel that this saludo kind of pertains to what we're talking about, which is Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And this one comes from Hank Barajas and también Eddie D'Angelini. He says, what was your personal highlight from San Diego Comic-Con?
For me, it was, and this is what made all 5 days worth it, it was getting to see the McElroys from the Adventure Zone, and them talking about their graphic novel, and it was just, it was, I never thought I would see them ever because they don't, like, they don't live in the Los Angeles area and everything. And, like, they've been to San Diego Comic-Con and stuff like that before. But I wasn't sure if they were going to be here this year. But they were. And that was really, really cool.
So what do they do?
Well, first of all, they do two podcasts. Mm-hmm. One with that's them and that's just the brothers, Clint, Griffin and Travis. Justin, Griffin and Travis. Clint is their dad. And it's called My Brother and Me. And it's just them talking about stuff, like nerdy stuff, but also about how being siblings and how, you know, sibling relationships and everything like that. And then the Adventure Zone is a D&D podcast that they did with their dad. And it's a lot of fun. And that's what was made into a graphic novel.
So the panel that she went to go see where it was the Adventure Zone panel was in the room right before our panel that we had, the Fan Base Press and Latinx, readers, creators, fans, whatever. Yes. I don't remember what it was called. and the line outside the panel was so long. It was down the hall, around the corner. I mean, people showed up for this, for this panel and for these people who do a podcast. And it did my heart good because I was like, maybe one day there'll be a line that big for us. And then, and Sarah, when you came out, you're like, oh my God, is that life for us?
I did. I was like, oh my God, I'm starting to sweat already.
So. Yeah, and Barbara tried to talk her down by saying, no, they're in the line for the bathroom.
Are there any other highlights in your Comic-Con experience, Jen?
Yes. Every con that I go to, I try to see if Blizzard is doing anything, and they did one this year as well, and me and my brother stayed for that one because we stayed for two previous panels because we love video games, and that's what that room was. It was just kind of like about video games, and they just gave they previewed some stuff about the game and the new hero that was going to be coming out. But at the end of the panel, they showed that basically Nerf guns, like the Nerf toys, are making guns that are like the video game characters.
Oh.
And they gave us little free bullets.
Oh yeah.
Little free Nerf bullets.
I remember seeing your little bullets.
Yeah, and I was super excited by that. I can't believe I'm gonna buy 50 of one gun just for a joke.
That's funny. Well, this is Kristen. My highlight, definitely, I would have to say, was our Fan Base Press panel.
Yes.
Being on that panel and...
That's the one I should have said.
The reception that we got and the people coming out and talking to us afterwards. I mean, it's always amazing being on the panels and the connections that we make and the people that we meet. But there was a different energy at this panel.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
And it was just so positive and very motivating as well, and kind of like a little bit of a confirmation that what we're doing matters and is important to people, and that we actually are making a difference.
Yeah.
And to me, that was the highlight.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely, I mean, that moment where that last question that Barbara asked us, and I was like trying to rack my brain what to say. And then Jen was like right before me.
Yeah.
And
Jen
said something so freaking powerful and so emotional and so like, you know, heartfelt that, I think she even pounded her head on the table, like, you know, and then everybody in the audience just clapped.
Yeah.
And all I could think about, like, deer in the headlights, like, I'm supposed to go after that. Like, and all I could think about was like, yes, Jen's right. So I just, that's what I did. That was my follow up because she just took the room.
Yeah. The entire room exploded into applause.
Yes, exactly. That was like, you know, when I described it to my family, I was like, they're like, how was your panel? I'm like, I don't think we've ever had to pause because people were clapping between what we were talking about.
Yeah.
And that was like that was like really eye opening to me because they were listening, they were reacting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They were there with us, and I thought that was awesome.
Yes, mm-hmm. definitely. And just the fact that based on our recommendations alone, the fan base press mm-hmm. table was inundated with people wanting to buy Quince and The Margins.
Yes.
Based on the fact that we talked both of those books up on the panel.
Yes.
To me, that's what it's all about. We're trying to get more recognition and eyes mm-hmm. onto Latino characters and creators. And the fact that, I mean, just the fact that we were witnessing it happening right in front of us, like, that was so validating.
That was extremely validating because one of the things we talked in the panel was just so like someone had asked a question about how we or like as like consumers and stuff like that could make a difference, and I was just so like, buy stuff,
mm-hmm.
just do it, show your support with your dollars, because that's what like corporations like DC and Marvel see,
mm-hmm.
and that tragic as it is, that is the truth. And so just buy stuff, and the fact that people went afterwards and bought stuff from Fanbase Press and Kisa, I was just like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Hey.
Was there anything that was a regret during this San Diego Comic-Con experience for any of you?
Yes, the regret was not bringing enough money. like legit. Yeah. There was so much stuff I wanted to buy.
Jen regretted having attended Anime Expo and spending all her money just the weekend before.
Literally just the week before. I'm honestly surprised I'm not sick because literally there was only a 1 week difference between San Diego and Anime Expo.
Yeah.
And I was at,
a lot of germs.
Yeah, that's a lot of germs. I'm surprised I'm not sick. maybe it's not more of a regret, but just kind of like, I wish I had the patience to actually stand in line.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because we're also, I would have been able to see a lot of Cool H if I would have tolerated going into the line and waiting for like Hall H and seeing all of that cool stuff. I wish I could do that. I can't. Can't do it. If it's 2 hours or longer, I just can't do it. I'm not wasting my time.
See, for me, my regret is actually very similar, is not having patience to go around and seek out more Latinx creators and do the interviews like you were doing, Sarah.
Yeah, you did.
You did some really awesome, you tracked down some awesome creators and you did some great interviews that, if you haven't already seen them, are up on our Facebook. But for me, I was talking about this earlier, just the convention was so crowded and I would not even make it from the trolley into the, convention hall when I was like, I just want to go back to bed. I just want to get away from all these people. I just want to sit down and relax. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think the heat and humidity had a lot to do with it as well. And like I mentioned already, it was really hot and humid inside as well as outside. And so I do regret that I missed that opportunity because this particular convention is one where people come from all over.
Mm-hmm.
And there was probably people there that we might not have the opportunity to see here at some local ones. But speaking of those people, I mean, hopefully we can find him here. One of my regrets is not having the opportunity to go and meet Sam Humphries in person.
Total fail.
Yes.
I was like, where is he? I saw that Fanbase Press interviewed him, so I went to Fanbase Press. And then they were like, we don't know where he is. We caught him at the Comixology booth. And then I was like, I'm not going to Comixology. It's crazy over there.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, maybe. And they're like, well, try DC. So I went to DC and they're like, sorry, he signed yesterday. And I was like, what the heck? Like, I'm just missing him over and over.
Yeah.
So at the end, and then you said he tweeted something, but I had no internet connection.
Oh yeah, that's how he wasn't even on my radar.
I didn't even know.
Sorry, Sam. but It wasn't until I saw his tweet that said, I just finished my last signing, or this is my last signing, or whatever, and I saw it after it had already ended. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, oh man! Yeah, and exactly. So then I responded and said, oh no, I missed you! Yeah. And he's like, oh, you guys were here!
Yes.
So that would have been great. I mean, if, for those of you who have not listened to all of our episodes, we interviewed Sam Humphries, I don't even remember which episode it was, but it was way kind of back in the beginning.
We have reviewed Green Lanterns and also Jonesy.
Oh, so, yes. We did both of them.
Actually, it just turned out so well for me to drive home because as soon as I got home on Friday, I started grabbing all the stuff from my shelf of all the people that I saw that I could see and have signed.
I regret that every year. I forget that every time. Yes.
I did not know so many of the creators that I did run into were gonna be there, and I was just like, shit, I did not do my research. I have so much stuff that I would have loved for them to have signed, now I don't have it.
I'm always running around last minute like, oh my gosh, someone's so signing, I gotta find a booth that's selling their stuff. But yeah, we interviewed Sam Humphries in episode 18, and then we reviewed Green Lanterns episode 8 and Jonesy episode 9.
Exactly.
So it was pretty in the beginning. And he, if you have not gone back to listen to his interview, definitely do it. Mm-hmm. He was such an amazing
guest
on our show. Mm-hmm. He was so, like, just thoughtful and kind.
And super sweet.
And, yeah, and he had, like, super great sense of humor. He like got all of our jokes.
Yeah.
It was just really great, and it would have been amazing. We never met him in person. We have only interviewed him over the phone, and this all started from Sarah's wonderful artistic talent when she made a Jessica Cruz Green Lantern piñata that we had at the first ever East Los Angeles Comic Con, and a fan took a picture and tweeted it to Sam, and Sam got into contact with us, and the piñata Jessica is now hanging in his office.
Yes.
And and that led to the interview. He was so kind to have an interview with us. So
yeah, that, and you know what, I really wanted to meet him because I have a lot of his books, but also because he seems like to have the most awesome sense of humor. Like, he dressed up as Harley with the makeup and everything,
I thought that was so
funny, and I'm like, God, you're like awesome. I want to meet you in person and take pictures and stuff, but it just didn't happen this year. So that's also that is a regret for sure. Any other regrets, guys?
I think that's it. Not my main regret, but a big regret that I have happened before the convention even started. They changed their exclusive buying process this year to where you had to put your name into a lottery, and then they picked your name, and depending on what exclusive you wanted, you would then, if your name was picked, have the opportunity to go get a ticket to stand in line.
Right.
And I knew that they were doing that, but didn't keep close tabs on when or how it worked. And not until I saw people posting on social media that they hadn't gotten picked for anything did I realize that it even happened.
Yeah.
And so I missed out on some exclusives. Mm-hmm. Although
Funko Pop ones?
Yeah. I didn't get anything. I mean, I didn't put my name on anything. Mm-hmm. But it was for a lot of the big major ones. But some of the booths opened up to the public after so many hours of, I don't know, with certain days. And I was able to buy the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive of Magic the Gathering. So I got all the foil planeswalkers.
Nice.
And they're so pretty. I'm just gonna put them away somewhere and maybe look at them
every once in a while.
Nice. But yeah. And I did buy some cool stuff. I don't remember what day it was, but the lines were like not short or not long. They were super short. So I would just go around and I bought some Thanos, related items. Yeah. So that was fun.
This is Sarah. And, what I loved about San Diego Comic Con this year, everything was so magical for me. And when I mean magical, it's first of all, I got the pass, which was amazing. But second of all, I wanted to have Mr. Nguyen, he does the artwork for Descender, mm-hmm, which yes. Jeff Lemire. Mm-hmm. I forgot what his first name is, but
Dustin.
I keep thinking David for some reason, but anyway, I got his last name right. I went over to have him sign my book because, like I said, I was able to grab all my books. So I grabbed that book and I wanted him to sign it, but he wasn't at his booth. Mm-hmm. So I left it with this young lady who was tabling next to him, and I left my phone number and stuff for him to call me when it was signed. And he hadn't called or anything. So then I went to Terry Moore's, and he was going to be there between like 3 and 5 during our panel. So I'm like, I might miss him. And then Mike, I can never say his
name. Mignola.
Mignola. He was there, and I got to go to... And one of the things I loved about this is I was able to go to some panels, which I've never gone before, and I went to his panel, and he gave away a Conan... Hellboy figurine Funko.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I got one of those.
That's cool. That's a good
That's a really good
giveaway. I've been in some good panels to everybody? At San Diego.
Yeah, to everybody that got a ticket, yes.
Nice. I've been in some good giveaway panels in San Diego, and some people really luck out of the cool things they get.
Oh yeah. You know what? I kind of looked it up to see how much it was going for. It's minimally going for $140.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and I didn't even have him sign it, so that I regret. That's a regret.
Yeah.
I was able to have him sign. Of course, he interviewed too, so that was cool. That was really great, actually. I was really nervous, and it was awesome. But at that moment, when I finished that interview, Kristen ran into me, and then... Armando
from Armando was right there at that booth.
And then all of a sudden, Armando from Café con Leche Nerds was there, and I was like, wow, this is so awesome. I'm, you know, getting to, you know, hang out with friends, like, out of the blue, like, we just merged together. And then Eddie came by. It was like super, and I thought that was super cool. And then fortunately, when I went back to get my Descender, he had just gotten there, so I was able to interview him too.
Oh, cool. Oh,
so,
nice.
It was all like serendipitous. And I was walking the floor when I saw, there was a book propped up. It was photographic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I love that book. I read that book like a week ago. I love it. And I'm like, where are they? Are they here? The creators? And they were like, no, they just left 5 minutes ago. Oh, I just left. Oh, boo. So I was making a little video about how I just missed them, and they arrived right when I was making
how
the
funny.
Video. And they were able to sign my book and take pictures with me. So when I say magical, I mean magical.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff just fell into place for me, and I thought that was awesome.
That
yeah.
is super cool.
Well, I'm super jealous of yours, of your Comic-Con experience.
Yeah, and it's, even though it was like, it was a lot of hardship, I mean, driving back and forth LA, and, you know, having to pack food, and I had my little nuts with me, my little trail mix, because I didn't want to die, you know? And, you know, and we kept
saying... You can die without a daily dose of nuts.
that's not what I meant. but what we kept saying to ourselves was like, why are there any vendors? We're so close to San Diego. Why aren't they paleteros or eloteros or hot dog people? During the course of the Comic-Con experience, I did see paleteros, but I didn't see the elotero, or else I would have tackled him. But I did see one a hot dog vendor.
The hot dog vendors were all over.
Really?
Yeah.
I only saw one.
Yeah. Is that the one where you overheard the conversation?
Yes.
That was freaking so funny.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to, because Kristen is the one who does these, like, frequently overheard quotes. And I was like, that is a great idea. And one of the ones that stuck with me was the one where I was going to go get my Funko free figurine, but I had to go to the Hyatt Hotel. So I had to cross the entire convention exhibit hall to get there, plus some. So I was able to run into a hot dog vendor. But another, and one of my most, of course, favorite things is having the, it was the, Wood Stout Authentification, what was it? Artistic Trifecta, and that was a 10.4%, and that was at the Marriott Hotel in...
The
Nintendo
Lounge.
I saw
it over there.
Yes, and they served the big cups.
Uh-huh.
So I was, like, in heaven.
Yeah.
I had two, and I was like, yes.
We actually reviewed one of the Woot Stouts,
yes,
remember?
Yes, we did,
yeah.
Yes. This is, I think, slightly different because it's the artistic trifecta. I guess it was just an exclusive for Comic-Con.
Right. The one that I did was the exclusive for that year for Comic-Con.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. Right on.
They do one every year for Comic-Con.
Duh, of course.
Nice.
But yeah, that was awesome. It was just really magical for me. I was able to walk around and just kind of like lose myself and find myself. It was just great. I regret some things, like I didn't get to see some Humphreys and I didn't get to go to the DC panel, but there was a lot of things that I did enjoy that I hadn't enjoyed in previous years.
Oh, that's
so
good.
That was really cool. I really, the last day that I was there, it was really just painful because we went and did the panel and then I had to go and find Terry Moore and then I had to go get my brother's cards in the Dragon Ball booth way on the other side of the con, but then I had to go all the way over to Artist Alley. It was just, and then after Artist Alley, I went all the way to the Hyatt. So I just did a big humongous zigzag.
Yeah.
Fortunately, yeah. I felt that having the backpack of all the books that I took to have signed, half of them were signed and half of them were not. Mm-hmm. So I think I did okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty good.
And I mean,
the fact that you even took books to get signed, you were light years ahead of Jen and I.
Yeah. I took one book and I didn't even get it signed.
Aww.
Yeah. They were ticketing the autograph sections. Oh, I regret that too.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just like you had to be there at 9 a.m. I was just like, I don't wake up till 10.
And that's another thing. Like, I didn't know who was going to get ticketed for. Like, I know probably Jeff Lemire I needed to get a ticket for and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't sure. So I just like, I said, well, fine. I'm just going to have to carry these all day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that was the day my brother didn't have parking because he didn't go. It was a Saturday. So I ended up parking in Barrio Logan.
Oh, that's right.
I took the trolley over, so I was carrying those books for every day.
Yeah. You know what? I forgot all about that because all I'm thinking about is the convention center. But like going to ChicanoCon was a highlight. That was a lot of fun.
Yes,
that was super cool.
Exactly, I totally agree. ChicanoCon was a really exciting, pleasant surprise. Just arriving there was just like I could feel the Latinidad all over.
Because we had to, it was a 0.6 mile walk from the metro trolley station to the brewery, and just walking through the neighborhood and being part of the neighborhood, and then the closer you got, seeing all of the art on the walls and on the fences, and because it was Comic-Con, I mean, San Diego, the entire town is affected by it. There were local artists there, and Barrio Logan is a local Latino community neighborhood, and there were some local Latinx artists that were actually doing live art in the street, and mm-hmm. that was super cool to see.
Yeah.
I actually started following one on Instagram, and I think he's gonna come down, hopefully, fingers crossed, for the art show and actually tag up my wall in the backyard.
For your art show that you have here at your house?
Yeah. So I'm excited.
That's cool.
He's super awesome. I really loved his art.
Well, one of the things that I had no idea we knew that it was at a brewery and we knew that it was in Barrio Logan, but one of the things that I didn't know was that this brewery is it brews beers that have Latinx like essence.
The magic, the flavors,
inspired by Latinidad.
The first beer that I tried of theirs was they call it a blonde stout, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was horchata flavored.
Yeah.
It was.
I had that one.
And that sounds like not beer-esque at all. Mm-hmm. It sounds gross or like, horchata flavored beer, but no, it was so freaking good.
Yes. And it wasn't that it was sweet. It's just you could taste the cinnamon.
Yes.
And it was, that's what made me really
so,
like it.
Yeah. So then they started talking about the other flavors that they had, and I didn't have a chance to stop inside to look, but, there was one that she described as, what was it? There was one that was, oh, well, so like Sarah has the thing right here. So the one that she told me, oh, so the Horchata Golden Stout is the one that we tried. Oh my God, there was an Abuelita's Chocolate Stout.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God. Oh.
I saw a video. I'm not sure what the video was, but they were,
God.
They were saying how, they had brewed the Abuelita Chocolate Stout. And that, there was a bunch of ladies that came with their strollers and stuff asking, they're like, we heard you have a Abuelita chocolate stout beer.
God.
Oh my God.
We usually drink wine, but we want to try it.
That is the best story ever.
It was so cool that we hit a demographic that doesn't even drink
beer.
Yeah.
So it was just so cool that they would branch out into doing these like Latin flavors.
Yes.
And then hitting a whole demographic that they weren't even part of, because
yeah, so,
they drink wine. Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't know that this was their thing.
Oh, yes.
And of course it's their Latinx owned.
Yes.
And they, I'm just going to read a couple of these flavors that they had there. They had the Gran Jefe, which was their wheat and pilsner, the Horchata Golden Stout, which we tried, the Abuelita's Chocolate Stout that we just said, something called Chiquitin. And this says this juice bomb is loaded up with the largest amount of hops that we've ever used in a beer. The result is a dry and sessionable tropical and dank IPA.
Mm.
That sounds good. They have
dan el chiquitín, por favor.
They have one called Saladito. Oh my God.
I want that.
Saladitos.
Yes.
Oh,
oh
my
God.
God. My mouth is like watering.
Yes.
Tarantula Stout, which is another stout. La Obscura, which is, it combines fermenting at high temperatures for maximum ester production from the Belgian yeast, which is, with the use of black, dark crystal, dark candy sugar, and rye malts. That sounds really good. Mm. And then Café Inglés. Which is, loaded with malt complexity. This is refreshing and light without, losing any of the dark malts that we all love. And then the one that she was telling me about was the Plum Berliner. And this is, using the kettle souring method of lactobacillus strains found in yogurt to sour the beer. We add over a pound and a half of plum puree to the finished beer. And the result is a sweet and tart beer.
Ooh.
So, I mean, the fact that this brewery is in Barrio Logan, majority Latino neighborhood and Latino owned business, and getting the community to come out and be involved in ChicanoCon, and they had different events and things going on during the day for kids. They had like cosplay contest. They also in the evening had some panels right there inside of the brewery. When we walked in, Lalo was up there doing his panel. Mm-hmm. Javier was there. Just so much cool, awesome, amazing community interaction, all revolving around beer and comics. Like, how much more perfect for us to be there could it have been?
Yes, it's like they made this convention for us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. ChicanoCon.
Uh-huh. So this was their fourth annual ChicanoCon, and I'm hoping that they're going to continue to do this and have something next year there as well. But we got some chisme about Border X Brewing that I just cannot wait for it to come to fruition. And the chisme is that they have recently broke ground on a Los Angeles County brewery.
Yeah.
They are opening a Border X Brewing Company in Bell.
I'm there for it. When's
yes.
lunch, your girl is there. You're gonna send me a tirada. Beer bottles in front of me.
So this Latino flavored Brewing Company is going to be right here in Los Angeles, and I cannot wait. And I'm definitely wanting to reach out to the owners to see how Comadres y Comas can become involved, because the Chicano Con, I want to do something like that here, and bigger and better, or just as good. Hopefully we can be there at the ground floor.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. We actually met Carmen and David Favela. David's the CEO of Border X Brewery.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to gift us this blood saison that we are... What time is it, girls? It's beer tasting time. That's what it is. So I'm going to open it while... Kristen, tells us a little bit about it.
So the Blood Saison is a hibiscus and agave beer. My mouth is already watering.
That sounds so good.
It's a beer inspired by the traditional Mexican drink, jamaica. Mm-hmm. Now, jamaica is my favorite. Oh, my gosh. I can smell it
Holy
already.
Shit, that smells so good.
Jamaica is my favorite agua. I love it so much. And so when she talked about this particular beer, when Carmen was telling us about it, I was like, oh my God, I need to have some. So when Sarah said she was able to get some, and Carmen said, oh yeah, we'll hook you up, I was like, oh my gosh. So this episode of Comadres y Comics is brought to you by Border X Brewing Company, because they have so generously donated this can of Blood Saison to us. But
oh,
it is tart and a red hue made with real hibiscus, agave, and crystal malts. So that is...
You had me at jamaica.
It smells so good. It's a 7.5 ABV. It comes in a 1-quart can, and the art on it is like Aztec looking. It's really cool. I really just dig the whole vibe of their can. And on the back it says, this is about Border X Brewing. There's a lot of borders that separate us as cultures and as people, but we're about transcending these borders. The way we see that in our beer is by fusing European brewing traditions with Latin American ingredients in just the right way. And it all happens in sunny San Diego. Experience great taste across borders in every can. My mouth is watering. Like, I just spit on myself because my mouth is watering because I can smell the beer. And then at the end, appropriately, it says, salud.
Salud, chicas.
There you go. Now, it is a tart, so I don't generally like tarts, but I have such high hopes for this.
It's actually...
It smells so good.
Delicious.
Oh, my God.
So, yes, it is delicious.
Oh, my God.
I knew you were going to be surprised. So, I actually stayed at the ChicanoCon a little bit later because I got there a little later. This is Sarah, and I was there with Yuri from YNC Comics. She has a YouTube video where she reviews books, comic cons, and geek culture. And I was there with her and her husband, and I was like, I got to drink a little bit more beer because this is delicious. So I tried this one, and I was like, they're going to love it.
Yeah. Oh,
so what is amazing about this brewery is you can actually get anything that's on tap and have them put it in a crawler for you.
Oh, is that what this is?
Yes.
That's when he was explaining to it, yes. I was like, oh, that sounds cool. But I didn't really know what he was talking about.
I have been very, what is it called? Familiar with growlers, the glass containers.
I thought that's what he said. I thought there was going to be
a
glass container.
I heard him say they're better than growlers. So then I was like, wait, what is he talking about?
Yeah, because it sounds the same. It's crowler.
Okay.
Crowler. So the cool thing is, like, it's a huge can. What they
do, 1 quart.
They fill it up with whatever you want on tap, and then they seal the can. So one of the things I wanted to ask was, because I wasn't sure when we were recording, depending on how we felt after the convention, I asked him, how far later can we drink this? Because I know with growlers, you have to drink it, like, if it's like a flavored beer, you should realistically drink it within 3 days.
Yeah.
Because of the sugars that go all the way, that sediment to the bottom. Mm-hmm. So with the crowler, he said, you can drink it like even a month out. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is perfect because, and I was going to bring more, but, I was afraid to run out of money. and it'd be overdrawn. So they gifted us this can, but I didn't want to get more than one either. And I paid for another one that I brought for my husband, and I brought him the Horchata Stout.
So, did he like it?
Oh, yes. We were, like, loving it. So I was like, darn it, I wish I had brought more. But now,
well,
it, now
we know where they are. We can go back.
Exactly.
We're going to be.
And actually, that's what I loved about this is the fact that it took me out of somewhere where I am so familiar, which is downtown San Diego.
Yes.
And I went to Barrio Logan.
Yes.
And I was just taken aback with all the wonderful smells. There was a lot of great food. I actually got to eat gorditas at the location, and they were delicious. And
When did this happen?
When you guys left.
Well, I had the tacos. They were good, and Eddie had the Mexican pizza, which was really good.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had the gorditas only because I hadn't eaten dinner, and I was driving them home because I asked them if they could drive with me. And I had had some beers. I had, like, 2 beers. So I wanted to make sure that they didn't feel like, oh, she's drunk and driving us. Mm-hmm. So I got some gorditas, and we shared them. And I was telling her husband, I was like, it seems like they have lard. And he goes, oh, yes, they do. And we just rubbed on them. It was, and they were delicious.
That, yeah. To me, all you healthy hipster foodie people do not know the pleasure of when you first take that bite of some Latino food and you taste that lard. Oh, yes. My God. That to me,
because Kristen's coming after you.
That to me is like, oh, it reminds me of my grandmother. It reminds me of home. It reminds me of growing up. But that is like the bar by which I judge all Mexican restaurants. I'm like, give me a taste of their frijoles, because if I can eat them and they taste like lard, then I know that this place is legit.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. But so what do you guys think so far? I mean, how are you feeling about this
beer? Okay, at first I was like, shoot, I'm gonna have to say something bad about this beer because it's tart. It's so good.
It's really good. And we used to try it. I thought it was just like, oh my God, I hope it's not a sour. It's not like a sour.
Yeah.
It is not.
No, you it's not.
Oh my God. You can taste the jamaica.
You can.
And
yes.
The agave.
Yes, you
that,
can.
That little bit of sweetness mm-hmm. that lingers on the tongue at the end, that is 100% agave. Mm-hmm. And I was just like,
this is
yes.
Like I went to what? The corner of Broadway and Gage and asked the little, the man at the corner to put to make my Jamaica fizzy and to make it alcoholic, and that's exactly what I got right here.
Yep.
It's so good.
But it's not like when you said alcoholic, it's not like you're making a mixed drink. This is beer for sure.
Yeah, no, it's a beer.
Yeah. You guys remember the aguardientes that we
had
that I brought from Guatemala?
Yes.
And how that was like Jamaica, it was Jamaica and like you could like taste a little bit of the aguardiente.
Yeah.
It was basically just a lot of sugar,
mm-hmm.
Jamaica, and very strong alcohol.
Yeah.
That's not how this is tastes
yeah.
like. This is really, really good. Mm-hmm. And it's 100% a beer.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's, yeah, okay, so I definitely taste the Jamaica, 100%.
Absolutely.
The agave, we only use in my house agave to sweeten things,
yes.
So in iced tea and coffee, I have it, sometimes when we run out of syrup, I put it on my pancakes, so I can taste it in here. But it, like I said, the carbonation, the beer, the fizziness of it is 100% beer, and what's a beer that I've had that is like, there's nothing similar. I mean, there's
nothing.
Just like when I had the Horchata Porter.
Exactly.
Porter. Horchata. The Horchata Stout. There's just nothing like it.
It works. 100% original.
It works.
Absolutely.
It works so well.
And they're located at 2181 Logan Avenue in San Diego, California.
A short 0.6 mile walk from the trolley station when it drops you off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. And I gotta say, I was trying to see what I wanted to drink as my second beer because, you know, I had to commit to a beer that I was gonna drink the whole thing and not have it mess me up to drive home. And I saw this one and I'm like, I love me some saison, but I know that they're bitter.
Yes.
Let's try it out.
Yeah.
But when I tried it, I'm like, I know that the girls are going to be a little shocked. I'm going to take that one in a crowler.
Yeah.
I immediately knew. As soon as I tried it, I'm like, this is the beer we're going
to
try.
Saisons to me, a lot of times are like super sour. Mm-hmm. And the first couple of drinks are okay, but that I can't, you generally enjoy them after that. But this is not that at all. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mm-hmm. when I saw that it was a Saison, I was like, oh no, but yeah, I'm not disappointed at all. I definitely am shocked at how mm-hmm. good it is and how much I like it.
Well,
yeah,
I want to thank here. Our sponsors for sponsoring this, this beer tasting, beer review segment that we have here on Comadres y Comics, because this one has blown our minds.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Definitely blown our minds. Thank you so much to Carmen and David.
And everybody at Border X Brewing that makes this happen. Makes this yumminess happen in my mouth.
Yes. And mm-hmm. you know what? Everybody was super nice
they
to me.
They were.
And I, you know, I went up to order beer and order the crowlers, and they were just really, really nice.
I mean, I
even though I'm short and you can hardly see me in the dark, they asked me, has anyone helped you? Yeah. Are you okay?
Do
you
need anything? Nice.
And I was like, I don't think I've ever been treated like that. At a bar or anything like that, because usually I'm ignored.
I mean, just to know that they care about community and that they were there presenting ChicanoCon to their community and inviting the community in, and the place was full of kids, and it was just a really family-friendly environment. And just as we were leaving, actually, a band was starting to play.
Oh, yeah, they were
and
so great.
I wanted to stay, but I was so freaking tired. It was Saturday. We'd already been there for 4 days, and also my husband was just like, come on, we gotta go. And it was, I mean, I was tired too, but I would have toughed it out. If we would have driven, I think I would have, but we still had to get on the trolley back and then drive back from wherever. So it was a mission.
Yeah,
but,
definitely. Yeah. But your foot.
Oh yeah. And my foot was already like three times the size. But, yeah. So, I mean, it was a whole production of stuff that they had going on there that day. So,
and I don't know if you guys saw, but there was a wall that was like covered in comic
books. Yes, I did. Right by the bathroom.
Yes. Uh-huh. It was awesome. I was like, oh my God, they really love comic books. It was great. It was wonderful. And they were just so nice. And so, I mean, I just can't wait till they open the location.
Here. I know. They said they just broke ground. Yes. And so, it might be some time, but just know that if you live in the Los Angeles area, it is coming soon.
You know what? I'm going
catch
to
catch me there 24/7.
I'm going to make it my mission to try to get the mobile apparatus going, so maybe we can even record an episode there when they break ground. I think that'd be really awesome. But so are we ready to rate this?
Yes, I am ready.
And maybe if you can walk us through the rating system, Kristen?
Sure. So our rating system at the bottom begins at flaccid. No one, if you're flaccid, no one wants anything to do with you. You do not belong anywhere near their palate. And then we go up to initial, which is just a little bit above flaccid, but not anything great. Then partial is right in the middle, so 50-50, you like it, you don't like it. Then we rise up to full, and full is pretty decent, I would say. I mean, you're not mad at it. Mm. And then the tip is rigid, and that is an amazing, oh my gosh, that is like just, you can't get enough of it. But at the very, very top,
there's more.
Out above rigid is the explosion of our rating system, and that is the Super Saiyan. And I will be the first to say for this beer today that I am rating it Super Saiyan.
Oh my God, guys. Really?
Yes.
That is amazing. You know what? And it makes me so happy because you guys hate sours. Yeah. So this just, it's mine. This is the first, ladies and gentlemen. This is the first. This is the moment in history you will mark your calendars and remember. Because the girls hate sours. And for me to find a sour that they love, my God, I don't know. It just feels so rewarding.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Kristen because I was going to go with rigid, but then you said, I do hate sour. I believe I once described it as drinking a sour is like drinking the throw up of after you.
Yes.
After you've drunk too much yes. and you throw up, and that's how sour.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I've described sour.
That you have described that one of the beers we reviewed that was also a sour. You did that, and then you said, "I cannot drink it anymore. Here, have it."
Yeah.
That's how bad it was. Yes. I remember.
And this is so delicious that it is, it's above a rigid. It is definitely a Super Saiyan, and this is something that I would drink again. This is how much I like it.
Yes. Well, I agree, guys. For me, it's a Super Saiyan, and it's almost more rewarding because I actually found a sour that you guys like.
is a Saison actually considered a sour, though?
Yes, I believe all the Saisons I've had are sours.
Like, well, I know that they're sour and bitter, but yes. I don't know that if they are actually considered within the sour realm of beer. I don't know. I'm asking.
We will have to get back to you guys on that because we want to make an educated decision, and I feel like I'm impaired because this is a 7.5, so I feel a little impaired to actually research that right now, but I will have that answer for you next episode. But yes, I'm gonna go Super Saiyan on this one because it's so gratifying, so satisfying, and I feel like I could drink this at any time, day, night, on a date, Netflix and chill with a steak, without a steak, with nachos. I feel like this is just a beer for everything, a beer for all occasion.
Good.
Even, you know what, and I feel like it's a little bit like Christmassy as well. This
it's red, yeah.
Yeah, the red color is really beautiful. It's a kind of a garnet.
Christmassy, Valentine's.
It's a little garnet.
So, there's this thing called Google, and I just Googled Saison, and it says, Saison is actually a pale ale that is highly carbonated, fruity, spicy, and often bottle conditioned. It was historically brewed with low alcohol levels, but modern production of the style have moderated it to high levels of alcohol. And so, let's see, the composition... they don't say anything about them being sours. I mean, I think that they are generally sour/tart, but I don't think that they fall into the actual category of being a sour. Uh-huh. So I don't want any, beer perfectionists to come at us because we're misrepresenting the beer.
But in all honesty, all the saisons that I've had have been
bitter
and sour and tart.
Yes.
So this one takes the cake for us all. It is a Super Saiyan, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a Super Saiyan in our hands.
Yay!
Yay!
Alright, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to review a book today, and it's called Reconstruction.
What? We're reviewing a book?
Yes,
oh my god, we are.
Aren't we like on hour 5 already?
You guys can pause it and then continue as you drive home. So this is kind of a play on words. It's Recon, like Puerto Rican, Struction. It's produced by Edgardo Miranda Rodriguez.
Which, we've seen that name somewhere before.
Yes, he is the creator and writer of Borinquena.
Yes.
So, this book is, reminiscing and rebuilding Puerto Rico. This is an anthology as well, much like Puerto Rico Strong, but this one is slightly different only because, this book got the rights from DC to represent a lot of the, DC heroes we all know and love.
Yep.
Like, Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman.
Superman.
Aquaman.
Metamorpho. Yeah. We have like some really like,
Big names.
In the superhero world.
Yeah, so the back of the book actually explains it as original stories that also take us to the past to explore the beautiful history of Puerto Rico, as well as tales that envision a stronger and rebuilt island.
100% of the proceeds from this anthology will go to the continued work to help over 3 million Americans living in Puerto Rico, providing solar-powered lamps, food, clothing, and so much more. These short stories remind us all that the true power of being a hero is inside each of us. And when we come together as a united people, we will never be defeated.
So what do you guys think of the book?
So we have, if you might remember, we have in the last couple of episodes, gosh, how many episodes back was it? Reviewed Puerto Rico Strong, which was also an anthology that was written by a whole bunch of different individual creators and had different artists, and all of the proceeds from the sale of that book, which was published by Lion Forge, we did that a couple of episodes ago. And so when I saw this one come out and you see that La Borinquena, the book that we all love so much, is right there on the front with Wonder Woman, I was super, super excited to read it. Mm-hmm. And I was actually super shocked when you opened the first page, how many freaking stories are in here.
There was a lot. I was surprised by how big.
Yeah.
And as I was reading it, because at first it doesn't seem it, but there is actually a lot of freaking content.
There is so much content. There is 190 plus pages in this book, and there are, gosh, I didn't count them, but let me see, 1, 2, 3. Just doing a little bit of guesstimation, in 2030, I would say there's close to 50 original, like, individual stories in here.
Yeah. And there's over 58 creators.
Wow. Uh-huh.
What struck me is the introduction that you just read, Kristen, was that tales that envision a stronger and rebuilt island, which actually answers the question that I had. Why were most of the stories kind of a fantastical, futuristic view of Puerto Rico?
Uh-huh.
Which is completely different from Puerto Rico Strong. And this is what happens when there are two products that have kind of similar topics or similar content. They usually get compared.
Yes.
So my name is Sarah, and I am going to go as far as to say that I enjoyed Puerto Rico Strong more only because I felt like it taught me more. There were more stories of the history of the island, mm-hmm. as opposed to like a fantastical view of what might be the future.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I could relate more to that, and I felt more emotional with that. I felt more emotional. I mean, I shed tears. And I was told and taught a lot of things that I didn't know had occurred in our history. Mm-hmm. So, for that reason alone, I felt not as attached to this one. Mm-hmm. Although mm-hmm. I was super excited to read this
one.
When you gave it to me, I was like, I'm going to read it tonight.
Yeah.
And I did. I kind of finished like 75% of it that night. Like I fell asleep at 2 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Because I was really excited to read it. Yeah. I mean, I love DC. DC is my jam, you know, like, mm-hmm. And it just felt like the stories were a little bit short.
Yes.
I really wanted it to be longer. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, you know, one of the ones that I super enjoyed was, what Jen and I were talking about was the Superman one. I love that one. That one was really like, I don't know, it just really touched me. Mm-hmm. It really did.
So just a reminder, we reviewed Puerto Rico Strong on episode 31. So that was just 4 short episodes ago. Mm-hmm. But I do have to say that I have to agree with you, Sarah, that it was very difficult to not compare them.
Right.
But they're two
different,
even though they're so similar into what their cause is and why they were made and mm-hmm. everything. It definitely is that their goal was kind of different, like you were saying, in the stories. And yes, I learned so much about Puerto Rico's history and Puerto Rico Strong, and there was very, very minimal in this, and I think it's amazing that Edgardo was able to really gather up all these amazing people.
Yes.
I mean, Gail Simone is in here, and there's like, you know, cover artists, Danny Mickey is like, you know, a well-known name, and, you know, Gabby Rivera has some stuff in here. There was some pinups in here, by some
Rosario Dawson.
Yeah, Rosario Dawson. So it's really amazing that this book has all of this influence in it, but I also feel like it was almost to its detriment that they tried to put so much in that, like, most of these stories were one or two panels or pages long.
Exactly.
And some of them I wanted more.
Yes.
I wanted a lot more.
I think if anything, we're kind of sad that we didn't get more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to say, because in a lot of, the way she addresses many of the superheroes is so familiar. Like, that, like, she's already established herself with them, that she knows them and stuff like that. And I was just like, how did she get to this point? You don't just go up to a superhero and just be like, yo, what up, my dude?
Yes.
And then, like, no, like, there's a
rapport.
That
would have been a great part of this world building, because DC Universe, it's established, but bringing La Borinquena in, I would have loved to have seen a little bit more of like that development of like, yes, how do they know each other? What have they done together? Or like, to have, first of all, to have La Borinquena in this book with prominent DC characters is freaking amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No question about it.
It was super cool seeing that.
Yeah. I mean, and to be an independent creator who comes up with this character and, you know, is out there pounding the pavement and going to conventions and trying to sell your book, and then for this to be part of your journey and having not only your creation side by side with DC characters, but to then also have it in a work of art where so much good is being done with the proceeds to it. I mean, I can only imagine what it would be like for to be the creator and to be the person who just, you know, started all of this way back when. And so that to me is great. But I also think that just that sheer fact that she is in this universe now with DC characters, that deserved a little of attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That she's basically in the canon of the DC universe is what I'm getting from this. So she exists. So I would have liked to have seen more. The difference between this one and Puerto Rico Strong is that Puerto Rico Strong was very firmly in the real, in that it taught us history.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much, like, there was some stories that were like mythological and stuff like that, and kind of like mystical, like mysticism, but it felt more like magical realism.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Than like firmly fantastical.
Yeah.
This is very firmly superheroes.
Yes.
And fantastic.
Yes.
And the fantastical. And the thing about that is that kind of like, the Borinquena didn't appear at all in Puerto Rico Strong. But when we read La Borinquena, there was no hint of her being with other superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that
she
was the first superhero in there, and that's what we got from there. But now, with this, she is not the only superhero. And this is why I really like the Superman story towards the end, because it gave us a reason why Superman couldn't help with the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a legit reason,
mm-hmm.
and it was really, really cool, and it really touched upon Superman and him as a character, but also La Borinquena. And that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
So that's why I really liked that. And because it's mixed in superheroes, but it mixed in also like realism as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it was more than 2 pages long as well. It was like 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they could have done more with that. Like, they could have done their own book that could have focused on, like, the main three or even just the big ones. Because another of the stories that I really liked was her with Green Lantern.
Uh-huh.
Jessica Cruz.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were just like, and they were like, Latina power.
Yes,
awesome.
Yeah.
And I would have loved the story about that. Because I believe Jessica is Puerto Rican, isn't she? Or
I don't remember, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Either Dominican or Puerto Rican. I can't remember offhand. I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to go back. And like, actually, because I think she is Puerto Rican. So I feel like they could have, there could have been a whole story in that as well. Like, really, like, there could have been a lot. And I think that's one of the things I regret. And then everything else, like a pinup page and all that stuff, could have been done in another book. Because I feel like they could have done another book. That this deserves another book.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really like the one with Starfire. That one I really enjoyed.
I enjoyed that one, too. I really liked the Starfire one as well. And which is funny, because I only get a satisfying Starfire story in an offshoot of a book that she only comes in out in like two pages. Tragic.
I also enjoyed the Harley.
Harley, Ivy, and Catwoman one.
Yes, that one was really great. I liked the development of how, because it gave us like kind of a question, mm-hmm. and then it developed the relationship, and then the outcome of them being together. So I like that one as well. One of my other favorite ones was the Mighty Maite.
Yeah.
I liked that one because it was really cute.
It was really cute, and it was like, and it was also pretty real.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that one was super cute.
I liked it because for me, that one, it just kind of, it showed like, if you like, children have ideas, and they're like so pure.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so, heartfelt, and they want to put, they're all into it, and if like the parents and the people around them, the neighborhood, because it takes a village, if they nurture these ideas and these hopes and these dreams, you can make a lot happen. And I think that's what they were trying to say, like, even the smallest child can make a difference. And I thought that was beautiful.
Or the fact that, like, you don't have to do something big. It can be, even the small things help.
Right.
And I like the fact that that they put in information how you can help donate to hurricane relief in Puerto Rico, because they're still affected by this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, like, we don't hear it in the news and stuff like that, or some of us like ignore the news and everything, but a lot of the people in Puerto Rico still haven't gotten relief.
Right.
There's some places.
One of the stories that really struck me, related to what you're saying, is that the one story where the woman, I think it was in the very beginning, where they're talking, the very first one, where she's taking us through how when it first happened, and then they lost power, and then days go by, then weeks go by, and the grid is slowly coming back, and that just, she had to go eat out fast food because she couldn't cook at home, and then there was no hot shower, and she couldn't do laundry, and that her neighbors were slowly getting it, electricity, but her house wasn't. And but
how they would hear the cheers in the distance when people were I thought that was like, oh my God, that made me.
Yeah, and to actually read the story and to kind of go like with that person and knowing that this is really what has happened, and that some people still haven't cheered because they still don't have power back, and they're still living just trying to usurp whatever they can from people who are willing to help them out. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's just so, that was one of the things that was so, I had like a dueling reaction to the book, where I knew that it was going for a good cause, and I knew that it was sharing stories that most likely were based in truth and in fact, and things that had happened. Like, you know, there was people that were in some of the stories trapped under buildings or cars, and a superhero came and helped them, or things, horrible things were happening, and the superheroes came and helped them, and all I could keep thinking in my head was, this really happened, and no superhero ever came.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And that was hard for me, because in Puerto Rico Strong, they were heart-wrenching stories, and I cried at some of those stories, and to really have that empathy for the things that were happening, and this one made it almost like, I understand the point of it, and you know, it was really an awesome thing to have La Borinquena and everything, but the fact that these are real things that happened and that these people are going through it, I had a hard time fully buying into it, because it made it kind of trivial to me, I guess.
Yeah, like kind of like a, okay, like, but what about the real people who were trapped under the rubble?
Yeah.
Like you said, there was no superhero that came. Those people died.
Yeah.
Like, that's, right. That's the honest truth.
Yeah.
And it's something that you wish the superhero could have come,
right.
But that's not real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, well, I liked some of the fantastical elements of it. It was definitely a different shift. So, like, maybe for people who didn't like Puerto Rico Strong,
mm-hmm.
who found it too real, too visceral, this one is a good one.
That's
for
a
them.
Good point, actually,
mm-hmm.
because
yeah, you're absolutely
because
right.
emotionally mm-hmm. it was draining.
Yeah,
yeah.
I loved Puerto Rico Strong,
yeah.
but it was I felt emotionally drained
yes.
after that one. This one is uplifting.
Yes.
It's
mm-hmm.
very much mm-hmm. uplifting.
It's definitely a beacon of hope, kind
yeah.
of like
uh-huh.
Trying to, you know, like show you the tragedy,
mm-hmm.
but know that, like, if we all work together, there is hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe that's why most of the stories are kind of taking place in, like, a futuristic
mm-hmm.
Neo-Puerto Rico.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
and that is actually one of the cool things that I did like about this story is... I mean, it says in the back, basically, Puerto Rico Strong, that was the theme, Puerto Rico Strong. And the theme here is, El Pueblo Unido Jamás Será Vencido.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at the end of a lot of these stories, you actually have the superhero saying, We are all Puerto Rico,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that.
Yeah,
yes.
And that was really cool. Like I really liked, and this is more of like a feel good one. The Diablo storyline.
Oh,
That one was,
I like that one. Yeah,
yeah. That one was just like he's like, I'm Mexican. These are Puerto Ricans. They're not my people.
Yeah,
and I, you know what,
yep.
I identified with that because
mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, I'm Mexican. Like, you know, but
mm-hmm.
you know, he realizes it. That, hey, we're all here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We all need to help each other. And I thought
yeah.
that was a beautiful message.
Yes.
Yeah. And I thought that was like a really good Latinidad moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, especially because Diablo is a Mexican super
Chicano?
Villain. Chicano.
Mm-hmm.
I think more Chicano. Mexican American.
Mm-hmm.
Super villain?
Yeah, I think they meant that's how they referred to him
mm-hmm.
in the story as a villain.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually had never, I'm not familiar with that character
his
at
villainy.
All.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was a bad guy, but then he became kind of, not exactly a good guy, but he was just like, I don't want to use my powers to hurt people anymore.
Okay.
So I'd rather just not do anything.
Gotcha.
And then in Suicide Squad,
the movie? I'm just kidding.
Movie and in comics.
I don't want to get you mad.
But yeah, Amanda Waller is just like, oh, I'm going to recruit you for the Suicide Squad. And so he goes, but in this one, he like goes to, and he's basically trapped in by the hurricanes as well, and he
right.
stays in an animal shelter.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of dogs.
Yes.
And I was just
and
like,
that actually,
that was really cute.
Yes, it
was
really,
really
cute. And it was also very, like, there's so much of what the hurricane caused and the
yeah.
aftermath
mm-hmm.
that people don't think of. And one of the actual statistics that was shared in that
mm-hmm.
story was the actual number of dogs that were estimated to have died in
yeah,
the hurricane.
Stray dogs.
Yeah, stray dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, when it comes to natural disasters, I mean, people have, well, these were stray dogs that they were talking about, but also people have pets.
Mm-hmm.
And pets, I think Sarah can testify here.
My tabby.
They are part of the family.
Uh-huh.
They
Absolutely.
Are like little hairy children to some people. And to not know what happened to your pet and to be worried about that and wondering if they're still alive and if they're okay and if they're suffering. Like, and at the end of that story,
mm-hmm.
when he is contacted, he asks for dog food because
oh,
these
yes.
dogs were starving there
mm-hmm.
there was
abandoned.
They
yeah.
yeah they were abandoned and they were no one was able to get to them if even anyone was looking for them at that time
mm-hmm.
and so that was one of the things that as I read the story I had not ever thought of like
mm-hmm.
that was real like that
mm-hmm.
that part of the story is probably really did happen, and that there's animals that needed help, and no one ever really thinks about that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Or I don't anyway.
Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, cause I'm, cause like, one of the worries is like, how are you gonna feed yourself? But if you have a pet, like, how are you gonna feed your pet?
Yeah.
As well. That's true. Also another worry.
Absolutely.
Another story that I really like, and this is a purely selfish one too, is I really like the Swamp Thing story because I too would love a swamp creature to grow flowers for me.
Yes.
When will that happen?
I have such an affinity for the Swamp Thing. So I also was so happy to see that there was a Swamp Thing story.
Yes.
But also it was such a cute story.
It was very cute. We love it. We love Swamp Thing in this household.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. Absolutely. Agreed. So are we ready to rate this book?
Sure.
Yeah.
So our rating system is a system scale of pan dulces, and it's a scale of 1 to 3, one being the like one lowest of the scale, and then 3 being the best. And then if we really, really like it, we will give it a higher rating than the 3 pan dulces, usually the whole panaderia. And for those of you who are new listeners, the way that we got our rating system is that we were trying to brainstorm a rating system, and we came up with pan dulce, and Jen said, well, the most pan dulce my mom ever let me eat was 3, so that was the best. So that's how we came up on 3. So Sarah, what are you going to rate our book?
Dang.
Called you out.
Called me out. I'm gonna go 2 conchas.
Okay. That is probably where I'm at here too. I definitely, just for no other reason than the fact that 100% of the proceeds of this book go to, relief, aid for Puerto Rico and the reconstruction of the island. I recommend that you buy a copy and make your own judgment. And, you know, if you're a DC fan, 100% buy the book and read the stories. If you're a La Borinquena fan, also, I mean, she's in almost all of the stories. So
with big DC superheroes. So that's actually, that was really cool to see.
So, but like I said, there, just for the things that I critiqued about, I wanted more of the stories. I feel like I was abruptly cut off on most of them. And then again, I just had this inner struggle of like enjoying. I felt like if I was to enjoy the stories, it was at the expense of making the real issue trivial.
Right.
Yeah.
So wow. 2 conchas for me.
I'm gonna agree with you, ladies. This is Jen, and I am gonna give it 2 conchas. Honestly, like, if they would have structured this better, or if they would have made, like, a part 2 and given some of the stories more time, it would have definitely been 3 conchas, but honestly, that Frank Miller art knocked it down.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that's right. I'm dragging it. That Frank Miller art was fucking awful. If this book didn't have it, I would have said 3 conchas. But it has it, so it knocks it down. And if they would have let him do something else, I would have said 1 concha. But still buy it because it's for a good cause. But the Frank Miller artwork, and it's like, it's not, they don't even leave it towards the end to like shock you.
Yes.
Like to be like, oh, like this belongs at the back. They put it like literally like the third thing you fucking see. And I was traumatized. I was just like, what the fuck am I supposed to be looking at here?
Yes, the back of the book is full of pinups.
It was kind of painful.
That's what Jen is referring to. The back of the book is full of pinups, and one of them is a Frank Miller.
No, that's it. The Frank Miller one isn't in the back with the rest of the pinups.
Oh, wait, it's not?
No.
It's literally the third thing you see. The third story or whatever. It's not even a story.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
It's page 13.
It's so ugly.
It's horrible.
DC, please.
It's
stop.
Horrible.
Spare us.
I don't know what's up with the eyeliner and with the no pupils.
I mean, it's quintessential Frank Miller. So, I mean, as soon as I saw it, I knew it. And
oh yeah, I can tell his style from a mile away because too. It's so fucking ugly.
Yes, me too.
But anyways,
yeah, it is traumatizing. I just saw Wonder Woman, and wow, okay.
Yeah, you're right. It's in the front. I didn't even realize
it's in the front.
There are some very beautiful pinups in the back.
Yes. Oh, they're
some
very
really,
beautiful.
Really nice
there's
ones.
There's some really, really nice ones. Yes. They are absolutely
And there's
stunning.
A lot of the stories, too. That was one thing that I really appreciated. Mm-hmm. The themes were the same, but the art styles were very, very different. I really enjoyed that.
I enjoyed that as well, minus the Frank Miller. please stop. Stop letting him draw. I will pay money to never see a Frank Miller artwork ever again. Dang. But anyways, it's two conchas. It goes to a good cause, and if you want a more hopeful stories and stuff like that, if you want more of that fantastical superhero stuff,
yeah,
this is a really good, this is a good, fun read for that. If you like, like I said, if Puerto Rico Strong is too visceral, this is a good alternative that's very hopeful and very heartwarming.
Excellent.
Minus the Frank Miller artwork.
It's time for On My Radar, and On My Radar is brought to you by Jen. Jen, what's on our radar?
So, On My Radar is, and I actually picked up this issue number one at Long Beach Comic Expo, and it is done by Chimera Press, an all-woman publishing company.
What?
Yes. So all of their writers, their artists, their editors, basically all of them are women. And
you can't sit here. Just kidding. I'm sorry.
And and the book is called Dragons by the Yard, and it's really, really, really cute. I love this book a lot. And the book itself takes place in Pasadena. Ooh. At like the Rose Bowl and everything.
Yes. And, that swap meet, right?
Yeah, a swap meet that happens there. And It's really cute, but the premise is basically there's this woman who sews dragon toys, basically dragon plushies, and like her most beloved ones are the ones that she sews semi-precious crystals and stones in. Until one day, she's given this mysterious cloth by this mysterious woman with one request: to make dragon plushies with brimstone in them. And she does this, and turns out the dragons that she sews become actual dragons.
Dun, dun, dun.
So that's why it's called Dragons by the Yard.
Cool.
And they're...
That's cute.
It's really, really cute. And and it's three issues. I bought issues 2 and 3 at San Diego Comic-Con. But I believe they first released issue number one about last year. About a year and a half ago at the previous San Diego Comic-Con. But it's really good, and it has a lot of good content, and the artwork is absolutely stunning. It's very beautiful. And I cannot recommend this book because I have if you guys don't know this, I really, really fucking love dragons. I have an entire magic that is themed around dragons. That's how Kristen got me to play magic. She was just one day she was just like, Jen, you know there's a commander set that's just about dragons? And then I looked back and said, I can be convinced.
Yeah.
Well, this is Sarah, and Jen got issue number one in Long Beach, and we rode the metro from the Long Beach, what was the end of the line, all the way up, and and you were like, you gotta read this.
Uh-huh.
And I was kind of a little hesitant because I kind of wanted to sleep. But I read it and I'm like, oh my god, do you have two? And she's like, no, I just got one.
Yeah. Because they didn't have issue number two out yet.
Yeah, and you were like, well, they said they were going to have a special announcement at San Diego Comic Con. So we've been looking forward to this since
Since Long Beach.
Since Long Beach.
How long ago was that before? I don't know. Was that November?
Was it March? Oh, that was last year's. So yeah. It was September.
September, yeah.
It was in September.
Yeah. So we were almost a year. We were looking forward to this second release.
Well, she actually, the, I guess, I don't know, the owner or whatever, mm-hmm. came by the shop and dropped off some books and like, I really want you to carry our stuff. And so I'm sorry if you're listening. I have you on my list of things to do. We just moved. you come highly recommended by Jen and Sarah. But she dropped off more than just number one. And I've had it for the longest time.
I can't believe this.
And Jen was like, I want to read it. I'm like, okay. And then I just forgot all about it.
Yeah. So I was just like, never mind, I'll just buy the issues at San Diego. I actually went looking for them because they had been there last year and I wasn't sure if they were going to be there this year. Mm-hmm. But I found them and I saw that they had issues 2 and 3 and I was just like, please sell them to me. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And they did. So
that was one of the things I completely failed on, was waiting and anticipating all this time, but I didn't put it on my list of things to do. Mm-hmm. And then when I got back, all I did was like scream at Jen over Facebook, mm-hmm. Jen, did you find them? Because I forgot. Fortunately, she did.
Yeah, but the story is very, very heartwarming, and it's very fantastic.
And I love the artwork.
Yes, the artwork is very, very
beautiful.
It's
so beautiful. It's so whimsical and just beautiful, and the colors mm-hmm. are very spring, I have to say.
Yeah, they're very soft. They're very pastel.
Yes.
And it's just really nice. And I feel like they capture the California sun very well.
Yes.
And like the California vibe very well. Yes,
totally.
So it's really good.
One of my favorite moments is where this one snobby guy is trying to get his daughter a dragon. She's like, I want a dragon! And then this other kid was like, oh, she's holding onto the dragon, mm-hmm. The stuffed dragon. And then she's like, oh, my dragon already picked its owner. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'll offer you like 3 times the amount you're out. And he's like, no thanks.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Yeah.
My dragons pick their owners. So I thought that was beautiful because, you know, there's a lot of that snobbiness here in California mm-hmm. where there's like, I can afford it and I want you to give it to me for like 3 times what it's worth. Mm-hmm. And people will do that.
Yeah.
You know, I know I'm for sale.
Yeah, I was gonna say, everyone has a price.
Everyone has a price.
Exactly. So
mine isn't even that high, but... But it's a very cute story,
yeah.
And it's very heartwarming and a little heart wrenching. Once I read issue number 3, I was just all like,
oh. "Is there only 3 issues?
There's only 3
issues, so we know for sure. There might be more.
Oh, there's definitely.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I see. So it's an ongoing, but there's only 3.
Yes,
oh,
there's only 3. Okay. And
soon to be able to be found at Heidi Hill Comics.
Yeah, that is another thing. They are a small publishing company, so they are not available through Diamond, but you can buy their stuff at chimerapress.com.
Chimera, that sounds like a disease.
No, mythology.
That's what I mean. Like, you know, they used it in Mission Impossible, so I don't know what the real meaning is.
Oh, well, a chimera is a mythological creature that Hercules fought.
Okay.
That basically it was 2 animals made into one. And
The
most famous is, it was a creature that was like half goat, half alligator with a snake tail.
Mm.
And so that's the one that most people know. So and then there's actually a thing in medical terminology called chimeras. Like, people can be chimeras in that at the womb, usually this happens with twins, at the womb one twin
absorbs
the other.
Oh.
And sometimes this can cause medical problems in the future, like way along the line, where they've actually operated on people mm-hmm. and found hair.
Clumps
and
of
teeth.
Hair. Yep.
With teeth.
Uh-huh. With teeth
and
bones in people's brains or in like other parts of their body.
The gallbladder.
No, yeah. And so
small intestine.
Or this is like how some people can have like 2 organs sometimes is because of chimerism. And so it's an actual medical terminology as well.
You're so smart, Jen. I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, because all I could think about was the chimera disease that was going to wipe out half the Earth in Mission Impossible.
Oh.
That was it.
I've never seen Mission... Well, I've seen Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, and that was just a lot of spy stuff.
Okay. No,
I saw the first one, but that was so long ago.
Yeah. Oh, man. You could totally... It's so dated when you see the computers. No.
So sad. This is why I love watching The Matrix, because I see them on their freaking 90s computers, and I'm just all like, shit, my dude. At least they came up with a good reason, too, as to why it's like that. They're just like, humanity isn't stuck in a program that ended with the 90s. That's why you're all fucking miserable. Like, you know what? That sounds legit.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Well, this is Kristen, and I also have an On My Radar, and my On My Radar relates to one of Jen's chismes from episode 34 when she talked about the relaunching of Vertigo. Yeah. And Jen and I were actually lucky enough to be able to get into the Vertigo panel at Comic-Con.
May I ask, was there a line?
There was, I was in the room already for the previous panel, so I don't know if there was one outside.
I barely got in, because, like, I just made it in, so I think if there had been a line, they had already seated everybody.
Oh, okay.
And I just, like, made it in to the scrap end, because the room did fill up.
Yeah, the room filled up. It was definitely completely full, so, but I'm not sure if there was a line out. Side or not, but I went early to make sure to get in.
Oh, right on.
And so we were introduced to the five titles that are being launched under Vertigo, and one of them is Border Town, which was something Jen talked about last episode as well, and that one just seems super cool. But the one that I want to talk about today is American Carnage. Oh, and American God. Carnage Man. Is written by Brian Hill, who is a writer for a lot of titles over at Top Cow. He does Postal, and I'm not sure what other ones he does, but he also is writing the Titans show set to launch on the DC branded digital service.
Yes, I can't wait. Oh my God, it looks so good. Fuck Batman. I'm sorry, go ahead, continue. I'm sorry.
And the artist is actually Leandro Fernandez, who is a Argentinian Argentinian creator. So that's pretty cool. And just listening to Brian talk about his process of researching this book was amazing. So the brief little synopsis is, in this thrilling crime saga, disgraced FBI agent Richard Wright, who is biracial but can pass for white, goes undercover in a white supremacist group believed to be responsible for the death of a fellow agent.
I read that synopsis and I was like, oh my God. But when you told me about his process.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now tell the audience, because that's where it gets you.
So Brian in the Vertigo panel talked about how he himself went quote unquote undercover. Now Brian is a black man, and he started joining these white supremacist, very, very alt-right message groups online, and started kind of infiltrating them and basically wanting to do research so that he could realistically write this book from the perspective of those characters. And he actually ended up meeting some of these people in real life.
Yeah. Wow. When he said that, like, I told him afterwards, I was just like, oh my God, are you okay?
Yeah.
When he said that at the panel, I wanted to go up, I wanted to be like,
I want
to
hug you.
Yeah. Like, I was just like, oh my God, like, are you okay? Let's be real. Are you okay, my dude? Like, is everything all right? Because that's just, and he said it too, it's something that we actively avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that we don't think about, and that we don't want to think about.
Yeah.
We want to ignore it and pretend it doesn't exist, because it's not part of our world.
Yeah.
So we want to just avoid it.
We want to avoid it. We want to kind of like shove it in the back corner, where it belongs. but I like how he pitched it too, how he's saying that, like, even like with all these other titles that are amazing as well, but he wanted something that had had impacted him.
Yeah.
Something like Preacher, something like Scalp.
Yes.
Some of that like real visceral stuff that Vertigo had been known for.
That, it had, he had me there. Oh, yes. I love Preacher, I love Scalp, and they are, for lack of a better word, dirty and gritty.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of saying, like, to him, that was the Vertigo brand for him.
Oh, mm-hmm. yes.
And that's what he wanted to give back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, I actually started reading the first issue. They were able to, they gave us all a copy of issue number one in the panel. So and so I started reading it there at the convention and, I haven't finished it yet, but, there is the buildup of the story here has just been, it really is like, it's really grabbed me and like, I definitely think that this is going to be a title that I'm going to look forward to every month.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely.
Wow. I mean, just hearing you guys, I was not able to attend the DC panel, but just hearing you guys describe this, I mean, if this man went and infiltrated white supremacist groups and all of that for his research on his comic book, it leads me to believe that other people can make that commitment when they're writing characters of other ethnicities. And
valid.
So you guys have no excuse. But yeah. But I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. I just, when you guys started telling me that, I'm like, I need to read this.
Yeah.
I need
yeah.
to read it.
I am very excited to start reading
it. And it must be such an amazing story because Vertigo is launching Vertigo again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Based off the strength of these seven stories, mm-hmm. including Border Town.
Oh, is it seven? I said five.
Oh, I'm not sorry. I can't remember.
I don't
five
or know.
Seven.
I believe it was five.
Oh, okay.
Oh, five.
They said five titles.
Okay.
There's a Sandman.
Yes, there's universe. A Sandman universe book that is coming out. So those of you who have desperately missed Sandman, you will be able to get your fix.
Me called out.
There's Border Town, which is by a Latino Latinx creator, and Jen talked about it last episode.
You're so cute. You keep saying Jen, but it was me.
Oh, was it you?
Was it?
Oh, I thought it was Jen.
No. I was just like, I wasn't sure because I know we talked about it, but I wasn't, was it me? Did
yeah,
I bring it up?
Because I was just remember. Really excited because I love Vertigo. Vertigo's my jam.
You know what? I remember now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It was Sarah. Okay. And then, so Border Town, and then something called Hex Wives,
yes.
which mm-hmm. is, the women are too powerful. They must be tamed.
Yes.
A malevolent conspiracy of men brainwashes a coven of witches to be subservient suburban housewives.
Yes.
But it's only a matter of time before the women remember their power.
So like Stepford Wives, but
yes,
but evil. Dark.
And then there's
Stepford Wives with a bit of Bewitched.
Yeah.
Then there's the American Carnage, and then there's something called Goddess Mode. In the near future, where all of humanity's needs are administered by a godlike AI, it's one young woman's horrible job to do tech support on it. But when Cassandra finds herself violently drawn into a hidden and deadly digital world beneath our own, she discovers a group of superpowered women and horrific monsters locked in a secret war for the cheat codes to reality.
Wow.
And then the last one is called High Level, and that is hundreds of years after the world ended and the human society was rebuilt from scratch, a self-interested smuggler with a price on her head is forced to traverse a new contingent of danger and mystery to deliver a child messiah to High Level, a mythical city at the top of the world from which no one has ever returned.
Wow, excellent.
Oh, and I guess there's one last one I didn't say. It's called Safe Sex.
What?
Oh, there's actually a whole bunch here that, so Safe Sex is, a dystopian sci-fi thriller about a ragtag team of sex workers fighting for the freedom to love in a world where sexual pleasure is monitored, regulated, and policed by the government.
Oh my god.
What?
That sounds great.
That sounds amazing.
Yes.
Oh my god, I want to read that.
That one is from writer Tina Horn.
Nice.
It's she's host producer of the Why Are People Into That podcast.
Huh.
That sounds really cool.
That's
and actually the artist is Mike Dowling from Unfollow in 2000 AD. That one's going to debut in 2019. That's why they're at the end in this month. The other ones are going to debut in 2018.
Yeah, in a couple months.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
And then the second coming is God's... This one sounded cool, too. God sends Jesus to Earth in hopes that he will learn the family trade from Sun Man, an all-powerful superhero who is like the varsity quarterback son God never had. But upon his return to Earth, Christ is appalled to discover what has become of his gospel and vows to set the record straight.
Wow. Well, Vertigo, we're very excited for you.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I'm very happy for Vertigo. Yeah.
Go to your LCS and put these on your pool.
So they can order them
Tell them. I mean, Border Town and American Carnage are coming out very soon in September. So we just put in our orders for Border Town this week. So make sure that you go to your local comic shop and let them know that you are interested so that they know how much to order and so that you will be supporting Latino artists.
Yes, and that was one of the questions that we had on our panel, whereas they were saying that a lot of these Latinx or characters were not really supported, and they actually died down, like in the Marvel universe or whatever, and we're like, you have to support them.
Yeah,
this you got to put your money where your mouth is. You got to support these so they can continue on. And actually, I already contacted my LCM and told them to put it on my pull list.
She did. She contacted us months ago, and I'm like, Sarah, they just announced this, and it's not even available yet.
Sarah, you know how the process works. Yeah.
I just to have it on your radar. Well, we kind of glazed over Chisme de la Semana only because we went into Chisme of the Comic Con, and this is Sarah. I have Chisme on. Two things. Saga is going to go on a year-long hiatus.
Yes. Okay, so Saga has a very inconsistent publishing record as it is. So actually the fact that they're going on a complete year hiatus and they are letting us know is somewhat kind of like a relief that we actually know what's going on. Like in the past, the hiatus that they take or for whatever, I mean, okay, Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staple are like super, super busy. They're so amazing. You know, Brian K. Vaughan is like a powerhouse name. You drop it and everyone, you know, has some Brian K. Vaughan book that has touched them in some way, shape or form. Fiona Staples is, you know, an amazing artist. She's working in the Archie universe now and like some, I don't know what else she's working on actually, but, she also, I mean, you say her name and everyone's like, oh my God, oh my God. So I can understand why their inconsistency has been that way over the years. But the thing is that no one knew when one was coming out. So actually the fact that this is now information that, okay, it's sad you're not going to get Saga, but at least you know you're not going to get Saga.
Like for a year, because I have known so many comic books where they go on hiatuses.
Yes.
And I'm just like, and they don't tell you.
No, and then just randomly one shows up on a Tuesday when we're going through the books. I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot all about this book.
Pretty Deadly.
Yeah.
The Red Star.
And so, I mean, honestly, it's a disservice to the fans.
Right.
Because there needs to be more communication so that and it's so sad when that happens, and I understand that it does, but it's so sad because kind of like the energy that the book has in the beginning falls down, and like myself, people forget all about the book, and then like, months later, it comes out to no reception whatsoever, and then the sales fall, and then usually what happens is it gets canceled.
Oh, that's too bad. The second part of my chisme is Lock and Key is an official series taken under by Netflix. They have picked up the Lock and Key series nearly 2 months after it was reported as a project that was going to happen with Hulu. Now, I don't know exactly why Hulu did not have any interest in this, and Netflix took it up. So it's actually a series based on an IDW publishing, and it's called Lock and Key by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. So I hear really good things about the comic books. Have you guys read it?
Yes. I read Lock and Key, Volume 1. I have not continued reading, and not because I didn't like it, but it's just I have a bad habit of reading Volume 1 and stopping. But for those of you who may not know, Joe Hill is Stephen King's son.
What?
And Joe Hill uses the name Joe Hill so that he can write under his own...
His own weight.
So that he is not getting any kind of special treatment because he's Stephen King's son. I mean, everyone knows now that, but in the beginning, it wasn't well known. And Lock and Key, if you're into horror comics, I highly, highly, highly recommend.
I heard great things about it.
So I have both Hulu and Netflix, so whoever got the property, I was set, but I'm so looking forward to this.
And I was kind of upset too because I also saw Gabriel Rodriguez signing and I didn't get his signature because I didn't have my...
Do we know what his nationality is?
He is Chileno.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. We haven't done one Chileno? From Chile, have
we? I know. I wanted to do his, oh God, there's another one, it's about a kid in the dream world. I have that book, and he did sign it last Comic-Con.
Okay.
So, anyway, I'll bring that up.
Dead Boy Detective?
No, it's...
Books of Magic?
No, it's really old. It's kind of like Finding Nemo? Not Finding Nemo.
Little Nemo?
Something like that. I'll look for it.
In Slumberland.
Slumberland. This is a Netflix. They've ordered 10 episodes, and they're going to be an hour long. It was, again, the pilot was issued... done earlier by Hulu, and it was, let's see, Joe Hill's gonna be a writer and executive producer on the show.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm very excited about that. Andy Muschietti directed the original Hulu pilot. He's an Argentine film director and screenwriter, but he will not be returning to do the Netflix series because he has committed to it too. Because he worked on it one.
Okay.
So he's pretty freaking awesome.
Cool. it is Little Nemo Return to Slumberland.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I knew it was something Nemo.
Yeah. And that earned him an Eisner Award nomination. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. I wanted to pitch it, but I didn't. I don't know why. I forgot. And then I couldn't find my book. Oh, my God. The show was originally developed as a pilot by Fox before Universal nabbed the rights for future adaptations. So this has been going through some kind of weird loops. So hopefully the finished product will be something that we can actually all enjoy and love.
Yes.
So I'm going to read the first TP and see what it's all about. But I've heard nothing but great things.
It's really good.
I've heard a lot of people, they're like, you got to read it. And again, I regret not having him sign the first TP. And he had like hard covers right there. Mm. And I actually took a picture of him, so I'll share it on our Facebook.
Cool.
Now it's time for Juntos y Fuertes, and to bring us Juntos y Fuertes is Kristen.
Okay, so y Fuertes is actually a nonprofit that I was introduced at the ChicanoCon this weekend. It turns out that they had asked Lalo Alcaraz, the first Latino syndicated cartoonist, to pick a nonprofit that he wanted proceeds to go to, which is also an amazing thing about Border X Brewing, that they thought about this. And so Lalo chose Border Angels, and Border Angels is actually an organization that helps to save the lives of migrants. They prevent unnecessary deaths and harm reduction through desert water drops, border rescue stations, and day laborer outreach. They also do immigration consulting. They provide free immigration services and consultations in Spanish and English every Tuesday night at their offices in Sherman Heights Community Center, which is in San Diego. And
then they also offer education and advocacy. They provide alternative break and education programs, including internships and community awareness of issues surrounding undocumented migrants, immigration, and border issues. They always are looking for volunteers and, of course, donations. So if you are interested in supporting Border Angels, you can go to borderangels.org. And they actually had some books that were for sale there. They had The Power of One, The Story of the Border Angels, which they had for sale, and they also have it for sale online. They have this really cute bracelet that is like an angel wing, and it's so cute. It's like only $7. And it's, if you buy it, the proceeds go to help the work that they do. So you can, like I said, go to borderangels.org and learn more about them. You can even make, donations there. You can fill out for their mailing list, and you can find them on Facebook, and they're located in San Diego, and you can email them at info@borderangels.org.
Yeah, and regardless of how you feel about migrating immigrants, that is not to say that you can't help out, because of the fact that a lot of these people need water, they need food, they need help. There are human beings out there that make this trek, and regardless on how you feel about immigration, I think it stands to say that we're all human beings, mm-hmm. and you can't just watch somebody just perish. It just
the bottom line is that people die in the desert.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
This is the thing that happens.
Yeah.
It's the desert is harsh. The Mexican desert is unforgiving, mm-hmm. and these people go through a lot just for the opportunity of a possibility of a better life.
Yes.
And maybe some people might not be affected by that, or they don't know how hard it is, but either way, a lot of these people's lives can be saved just because they found water in the desert.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I've actually met people who have migrated here illegally, and they actually experience a lot of hardships. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody does when they try to migrate somewhere like illegally, but in this case, I mean, there are certain things like La Bestia, which is a train. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, I've actually heard of people in small towns who get together, the women get together and they cook and they package meals and they throw them up into the, the train.
I saw a video about that.
As it's going by. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there's not enough for everybody to have some. So they end up like feeding maybe the first half of the train, and then the rest, they don't get anything to eat or drink or anything like that. So, I mean, it's we're humans. It's mm-hmm. humanity. And we should want to help each other out, regardless of immigration status, I think. Mm-hmm.
To me, it's amazing that these people are actually trekking out into the desert themselves to help people that they have never met, that yes. they probably will never meet, and just in hopes of somehow helping them and preventing anybody from succumbing to the elements. And I mean, I've also seen videos of some organizations that do this kind of work, and the volunteers, and it's all volunteer. The volunteers that do that are amazing people. So if you're not the person who sees themselves out there trekking in the sun to do this work themselves, you still can support the organization by donating or sharing or just getting the word out and educating other people that this organization does exist.
Absolutely. And my God, it's amazing that they even made this happen. I mean, I think it's wonderful that they're out there helping their fellow man. And now it's time for Saludos, which is a new segment here on Comadres y Comics. Richard Hamilton said, by far the best panel I attended at San Diego Comic Con 2018.
Yay!
A beautifully moderated, thought-provoking, heartfelt, and hopeful conversation about Latinx comics. I left feeling proud and inspired. Thank you so much, Richard Hamilton.
That's awesome.
Amazing. That's super cool. And it warms the heart just to hear somebody say that. I mean, oh my God, that's so cool. Thank you so much. Seque Peña, who is an artist for that book, Photographic.
Yeah.
He said, "It was great to meet you. I'm glad our paths crossed. Thanks for the awesome podcast vibes and support." Yay!
Yeah.
Isabel Quintero, who is the writer of Photographic, she said, "It was awesome to meet you. Gracias por el apoyo." Awesome.
We're Jeffrey Cheney. Happy to support.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Her book is amazing. Jeffrey Cheney, downloading Comadres y Comics after their wonderful panel yesterday at San Diego Comic-Con. Kate Sanchez, "I found Comadres y Comics and my heart is full."
Aww.
"If you're a Latinx comic fan, this is for you." Thank you so much. That's so amazing. Yeah. You guys are so amazing. And then Latinx Nerds said, replying to, actually he said, "Slamming the follow button like Christina Aguilera and America Has Got Talent." So I'm like, oh my God, this is such an overwhelming amount of support and love. And thank you so much. And we hope to do justice to everything that you guys want to hear about Latinx creators, writers, fans, strong female characters. If you have any questions or any feedback, please do let us know. Girls, where can they find us?
You can find us, as always, on Instagram at Comadres y Comics.
Or on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
We have a Snapchat. It's Comadres y Comics, so you can find us on Snapchat. And also you can email us at comadresycomics@gmail.com and on Facebook. This has been episode number 35, and we have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.